Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's a disease that affects 5.5 million Americans, many more than that worldwide, but it's one that we don't entirely understand. We may have taken a bit of a step forward on the understanding part, or at least early detection. Today, the National Institute on Aging has released new national guidelines that are meant to outline early signs of the disease, and they've added a stage. This is the first change in catching signs of Alzheimer's early in about 30 years. Coming to help us explain what these guidelines are, David Shank, who's author of The Forgetting Alzheimer's Portrait of an Academic, and he's also a correspondent for TheAtlantic.com. David, to be very clear, these are early detection guidelines. These have nothing to do with treatment, right?
That's right, and they're not really changing in any fundamental way the way that the disease will be diagnosed. They're more a way of helping doctors and researchers talk about the disease in a new conceptual way, understanding that the disease actually is forming for years and even decades before you can really diagnose it.
But it was obviously important enough for the National Institute on Aging to make changes to these 30-year-old guidelines. So what kind of real effect or difference does it make when you have these guidelines in place?
Well, the effect is going to be kind of a slow and long burn for patients. But what it's going to do, it's going to help focus research. It's going to help formalize the very aggressive move toward developing standards for biomarkers. We are going to see over the next couple of years some real changes in diagnosis. We're going to see some advances in discovering biomarkers for Alzheimer's move to the actual diagnostic, retail consumer diagnostic level.
You mean biomarkers in the brain when they take brain images?
Brain images and also spinal fluid.
Right. And there was this report out last week about brain shrinkage being part of this sort of early stage. Let's break down the guidelines. You've got this early stage, which is a set of predictors or phenomena which possibly lead to a second stage where early actual symptoms begin. And then, of course, the dementia, the third stage that we understand as a traditional Alzheimer's. By creating these three categories, it means research can be focused on the individual categories, without having to cure Alzheimer's, I guess. So it makes it easier to research early stage as a particular grant without necessarily having to show that you've affected the outcome in people with dementia, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's also saying how important it is. We've actually known for years that Alzheimer's is a disease that forms in the brain for years, if not decades, among people who eventually then develop the symptoms. And this is just a formalized way of saying
David, let me back that up then a second. If this is something that goes on for years, how are we not just looking at a genetic predisposition for the brain just wearing out? People are living longer. Of course, they're going to wear out sooner.
That's not an unreasonable way of talking about it, and there are definitely a whole bunch of genes that are associated with this disease. Of course, any genetic-related disease is also going to be related to the environment. There are very, very few Alzheimer's genes where if you have the gene, you're definitely going to get the disease, so you can't really predict it that easily.
We're speaking with David Shank. He is the author of the book, The Forgetting Alzheimer's Portrait of an Epidemic. David, explain to me, what does a doctor tell a person when they go into their doctor's office to get maybe a checkup, and that for whatever reason they get a test which says they may be getting dementia later in their life? Explain to me what the doctor has seen and what that means for the patient.
Well, they've probably the patient or relatives of the patient have probably said we're seeing some mild or not so mild problems in memory here, and would you examine this? So what a doctor first does is rule out the other possibilities. Is there some sort of bad drug interaction that's going on? Is there some sort of severe vitamin deficiency? And they'll use brain scans and other tests to rule all those things out. And having ruled those things out, then they'll drill down on this probable or possible diagnosis of either mild cognitive impairment, which is kind of pre-Alzheimer's, or actual Alzheimer's disease if the symptoms are a little worse than that.
Now, if you get this MCI diagnosis, mild cognitive impairment, it doesn't always lead to Alzheimer's. That's the real sort of devil in the details.
That's true. So we can say that every person who eventually gets Alzheimer's is going to have some symptoms of what we could call mild cognitive impairment, but not every person in that MCI phase is actually going to then go on to develop Alzheimer's. That's why this is so vexing for everyone involved.
And the other vexing part, of course, is that there's nothing you can do anyway at that point.
That is the giant. That's the giant vexing part, is that we really don't have drugs or treatments that can really do anything about this yet. But if we focus more, if we develop a better conceptual framework, which we're doing, and we focus more research on all these questions, we can develop those drugs faster. And that's really what this is all about.
I mean, you've done a portrait of the devastation that Alzheimer's can wreak in families and among loved ones, marriages, in your book, The Forgetting. I'm wondering if you'd want to know early.
Well, you know, that's a great question. Of course, anyone can understand how haunting it would be to get an early indication or the earliest possible indication that you're developing Alzheimer's. And some people might want to say, I would want to stay away from that. But the truth is, it really is helpful for families and individuals to know that they're headed down that road. It can really lead to some very important planning, some really important
Right. But you're a big Atlantic correspondent now. Are you going to dodge that question I just asked you personally?
No, okay. Direct answer, yes, I would want to know.
All right.
You're saying, John, you wouldn't want to know?
I would not want to know.
I would. I'm with you, David. I would definitely want to know.
I think it would also become apparent to everyone but me, probably.
So, David Shank, this is not a giant leap forward, but would you say these new guidelines are some kind of improvement?
It's a very important step forward for researchers and for educating general practitioners who may not know what the latest is on the disease. It's not going to make a huge difference directly and immediately for patients. It's certainly not going to slow that down the disease or anything like that. But it's one more important step forward in boosting the war against Alzheimer's, which is just absolutely critical right now.
David Shank, author of The Forgetting Alzheimer's, Portrait of an Epidemic, and correspondent for TheAtlantic.com. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
He's also the author of that great book on the genius within all of us. You can see more evidence of David's work online. And, of course, we knew you would want to be a part of this conversation.
This is Andrew from Michigan. I think that if I had early onset Alzheimer's, I would definitely like to know to give me a chance to square things away with family, be able to make a living well if I hadn't had one already, and just to be able to enjoy the time that I have left, regardless of whether or not it ever does go full-fledged.
A listener from New Jersey posted this. I think I would want to know so I could have a say in my own care and prepare my child. I may not be able to change what is going to happen for me, but if I can make it easier on my child and make it easier for loved ones to cope, then I would want to know.
That's a good point.
Weigh in like Lisa did on these new guidelines from the National Institute on Aging by heading to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.